This is Heidi Helfand. You're listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your co-host, Andy Cleff, and I'm here with Chris Merman.
Hi.
Wow, that was a nice, slow
rise. We're recording during the day. This isn't not like our usual evening affair kind of a thing, so I'm kind of more mellow. I'm just, instead of, I've got my iced tea, my hibiscus iced tea.
Good for
so
you.
So I'm a little more mellow than usual.
Awesome. I'm three cups of coffee in, so I might be a little wired. We're delighted to be joined by our guest, Heidi Helfand, author of Dynamic Reteaming. You came back after almost exactly 3 years, Heidi, October 2017, when your book first came out.
Wow, it's been that long. It's nice to be back.
Before we dive into what's new in the new edition, can you give us a quick overview of, for those not familiar with the concept of dynamic reteaming?
Sure. Dynamic reteaming is really, the essence of it is really about team change. Just the idea that a lot of the times, for very good reasons, and sometimes just due to nature, our teams are going to change. They're not going to have the same composition that they used to have. And when this happens on different levels all around us, like this person moves to that team over there, or this other team that we see across the room splits in half, or we acquire another company and employees are filtering in and getting blended with our teams, is kind of the dynamic nature. So dynamic reteaming is team change that could happen at a lot of different levels, and it could feel more dynamic the more you have going on or the more that you notice and are exposed to. So that's it pretty much in a nutshell.
Makes sense. One of the lines from your book, change is going to happen. Get good at it. Don't resist it. And it often goes counter with a misconception about particularly Scrum teams that they're heavily persistent.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I think I love the idea of you got a great team dynamic. Let's keep it together as long as we can. I mean, if things are functioning, you're delivering value at an acceptable and awesome cadence for your customers, you know, you're building the right thing. It's an enjoyable experience. The team feels very effective and reflects and gets better at what they do. Like, we want to keep that team together, right? But the fact is, sometimes life happens. We move away. We're not part of that team anymore. A different priority comes in from our management, and our team gets split. I think just like an ice cream cone, you want that awesome ice cream cone to last forever. But the fact is, if you hold it, it's just going to drip and melt on your hand. And I think teams are like that too. Like, they're kind of living entities that evolve. And to try to keep them the same can also be counterproductive with goals of your company, especially if you're a company that you know will be growing and getting larger and expanding. You're going to have to evolve with the changes due to scale. And a lot of the times it involves reorging teams and kind of reconfiguring teams. So I think trying to keep teams the same as the goal, like in some of the traditions that, you know, we've been familiar with Scrum and other things, it's just, I wouldn't really look there. I'd kind of look the other way. I'd look to, it's going to change. So how can we get better at that? How can we kind of amplify the excellence of whatever that turns out to be?
I always use the buzzwords, we expect change, right? So how do you be ready when the change happens? So you said something, Heidi, that I really want to push on, because, you know, I'm full of the same buzzwords and workshop lingo as everybody else. So we say, oh, you bring work to stable teams, you know, you don't bring teams to the work, kind of a thing. And I just wonder, have we just assumed that you build the team once and it stays together and that was the norm? Like, that's never really been the case, has it? I mean, we don't, this idea of stable teams is almost a myth in these days.
For me, it's, you know, I've been in this industry about 20 years and I've always been a practitioner. I mean, I had a stint for under a year as a consultant during my career, but I've been at different startups that kind of grew and scaled and became public companies or were bought. And, you know, everything changed. You know, sometimes we'd form teams around the work. It was more of a work-driven kind of thing. Other times we had the teams and they would select work from a prioritized list. There's, you know, I've seen different things. I've seen some people prefer a team that's more stable. Some people don't. Sometimes it kind of depends on what it feels like. Are we engaged in the work that we're doing? Is it an enjoyable experience to collaborate with these particular people? So I think it's just, there's like so much to it that, you know, you might have a company that is working at a slower cadence. Maybe they're not growing very much. Maybe their teams feel more static because they are, and they only have maybe some kind of reteaming at the edges where somebody joins or someone leaves and it's like a really slow pace. It's probably a continuum from like slow to really fast rate of change. So I think, you know, depending on where you are, it might feel different. I think the important thing is before you join, try to understand what it's like at that company if you can. And I think some of the best companies, especially the ones that reteam a lot, like Menlo Innovations, for example, Hunter Industries in Southern California, they have really great parity with their interviewing and hiring and how they actually work. Based on some interviews. So it's like, know what you're getting into, because it will vary. For the consultancies, maybe trying to teach certain methodologies, maybe holding teams constant is useful because they're trying to change so many other things. Maybe that's right. Why there has been an emphasis, you know, along with it, you know, forming, storming, norming, performing, just this idea that things are linear and then end. Right. But, you know, like that research was based on other kinds of teams, software teams. So.
And a lot of the times we're brought in at the quote team level to train roles and practices. And we know that that only goes so far. I wanted to unpack a little bit, maybe this is a deep rabbit hole. What do we mean by team? And whose lens are we looking through, right? There's obviously the project team, the product team. There's the coach's view of the team, the team's view of the team, the stakeholders, management. So dive in there. When you, both of you, Chris, Heidi, think of a team, what does that mean?
Yeah, I think it, like in English, the word team is ambiguous, right? It's lexically ambiguous. It can mean a smaller group, a larger group. It's like there's a concentric notion to team. Someone might be talking about their company, the company they work for the past 5 years. Oh, we're such a great team. Someone could be talking about their immediate day-to-day, the people they collaborate with on shared work. They might call them a team. It could be a person who's in a UX type role and they're talking about the people that are also in a UX role who all report to the same manager and they refer to themselves as a team. Some would call that a group. We can get pedantic about it. And I think it's really kind of, what's the smallest unit that can be considered a team? Like some think it's two people. Yeah, with shared work. They're like thought partners. They're collaborating on this thing that's beyond the two of them. Like it's anytime you have like a third entity, right? Like two people plus you have this notion of a team system. I love the book Creating Intelligent Teams, for example, that comes to mind about viewing teams as systems. I'd be curious what you have seen.
I love the what you said earlier, Heidi, about that's it's whatever the size group it is, it's the kind of the small little changes on the periphery that kind of make a team. Because those things tend to happen, right? Whether it's you add a person goes and moonlights on another area, like to the point of your book, right? That dynamic effort, or it could be the work that comes in, the you know, camaraderie that forms, right? There's this sense of purpose and vision and belonging that we have, regardless of whatever, you know, whether it's me and my wife is a team, or, you know, me and me and the AU board is a team. It could be like the group of, I mean, every, you know, that's the thing that sucks about our language, is just that so many words mean absolutely nothing, and, or it can mean everything, right? It's just, it's all of these things kind of put up into a ball to say, well, we're here. I guess that makes us a team, right? I don't even know if that, like, what resonance does that have if it can mean anything? Sorry, man, I'm waxing way too poetic this morning. I don't know what's in this tea.
You sure you got it from the right bottle?
Right.
Well, and to add on to that, it's like, okay, so what's important there, right? Well, maybe it's about who are we with together, and how are we using this word, and are we aligning on it? I think maybe there's a definition inside a company of what a team is in a particular context. I think many of us as coaches like to talk about this concept. I don't hear many other people talk about it, like in the work that I do. We have these definitions, and we have squads, right? Here, there's another word.
Somebody's right.
But I heard we're changing that to team, but it's hard to change language like that.
To make it less ambiguous or more ambiguous, right?
I always just experience people's like direct reports, or the people that you're on the same level at, kind of a thing. That's where, at least in IT, that's how people seem to, whether that's six people or 60, right? There's a lot of possession in the word team, like right? My team, which is also another interesting aspect to the teaming effort, because if you're all peers, is there possession involved, and what am I communicating when possession's included? So, you know, there's all sorts of weird aspects of that, because the possession, it's almost like we need it to identify with something.
Not only that, but if you take it into a sports analogy, it becomes competitive. Right.
Oh, well, there's tons of competition in agile teams in IT today. Why else would we broadcast everybody's velocity up on the screen if we didn't like a little bit of competition?
Oh, talk about a rabbit hole.
We do.
Some don't. Yeah. Second edition. So, you know, since the first edition came out, the world has completely changed in ways that none of us expected. So how has 2020 fully remote impacted this idea of dynamic reteaming from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, let me tell you a few things about the second edition, then let me connect it to COVID, because as I was finishing the second edition, COVID emerged on the scene. And, you know, it was interesting because I think at the beginning of COVID, we're all trying to make sense of like, what the heck is this thing? Okay, it should be over in 14 days. And then it kind of, you know, is it 6 months or more now?
Six months.
Right. So it's kind of this change outside our team. It's this change outside of our lives that has impacted us, that has kind of forced us to really adapt more than many other things in our lives, right? The second edition was getting completed during COVID, and I think it was released in July. And it was a partnership that I had with O'Reilly. So the first edition I self-published, kind of met and formed a relationship with one of the acquisition editors at O'Reilly. And then they were interested in publishing it. And I was kind of like, well, it's already done. It's already finished. And then as we got talking more, I thought, well, you know what? Things have happened. Things have changed. Maybe I'll work on a second edition. What do you think about that? And we kind of went back and forth for a while. And then it really kind of made sense, because there were things that I wanted to change anyway and I wanted to write about. So there's some new interviews with some technical leaders that weren't included before. The second half of the book has a lot more kind of practical activities that people can use right with teams before, during, and after a change, right? So there's something about planning a reteaming initiative if you're going to do it deliberately, and reflecting on it and how it went. So there's some kind of practical tips for planning on executing and then dealing with changes. I think one of the most pertinent additions to the book is the concept of dealing with changes that have happened that maybe you didn't really want to have happen, or maybe they were outside the control of your team. I mean, I love the idea that teams can evolve and they can choose to evolve how they feel like they want to evolve based on a retrospective. Like, we're a big team, we have a retrospective, we have ownership over our team composition, we can make the decision to split our team in half, for example, in order to try to get more work done or pursue excellence, whatever you want to call it. I love that idea, but the fact is many things happen outside of our control. And remember those different levels we were talking about before? So it could be that you're on a team and it's outside of your control, but the coworker you most love collaborating with is leaving the company to go to another company. You have to deal with that. It could be that there's a new strategy and the teams are going to change their composition to better support that strategy, and the team that you love being on is going to shift and change. It could be that you're working on something and that work is a lower priority now, and in order for the survival of the company, you have to stop working on that and work on something else, and it shifts the teams. That's a hard one. I've been through that multiple times in my career. You know, so there's some things are just out of our control. And so if we look at these different levels, individual level, team level, kind of like a team of teams level, department level, company level. First company I was at, startup, we had, you know, I think it was 2000 and early 2000s, we were acquired. I didn't want that to happen. We had these dreams of going public. This was a .com company we invented, GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar. That's not how I expected it to play out. We were expecting something else. But the fact is something else happened and we had to deal with that. And so in the book I talk about, so there's like a structural change in teams, right? Who's going to be on what team? How do you figure that out? How can you be inclusive with that? But then there's the idea that you can't just snap us into place and expect us to be fully emotionally, mentally ready to roll there. There's transition times that happen. It's almost like a tracer, right? You want to move this thing over and like slowly the people through going, however you want to look at it, a Satir change curve, a Kubler-Ross grief change thing. I use an EcoCycle as a tool for understanding changes in teams, but like the people take time to accept the change and to move over here. So I go into detail about that concept, and I have some tools for use with people that are trying to, how are you going to visualize it, right? Let's say you have a big org change, a bunch of people are asked to leave, and people are switching places and realigning. It's typically invisible. Who's where on this change curve? How are you going to know? I use an EcoCycle where there's an activity where people can, like in the context of a group or a team, talk about where they are, try to visualize it, try to understand how to support the people best to get over into the new place. Because like, frankly, for many of us, there's high stakes. We got to change in order to succeed in what we're trying to do with the software we're trying to sell. Procore, we're trying to change the lives of everyone in construction. We're trying to connect people to a global platform. We got to shift forward, and we do in order to succeed. So how can we improve our time to adapt? That's a very management-centric kind of thing that I'm saying, right? Like, we got to move on, right? If we have changes, we can expect more changes. We got to move over here and move on. But the problem is we're dealing with humans, and it's emotional, and I can't move on yet, Heidi, because I'm doing this other stuff. Like, and I'm worried about this. So I go into that in the second edition a lot more that I did not address it in the first edition. So yeah.
I love that you're attacking the psychological safety and awareness of it, which is kind of, it's almost, see, it's so funny that this year has kind of made everybody go, oh, I know we've been talking about psychological safety and emotional safety for like so long. Now we actually have to do it. We like there our people are, you know, there's companies where, you know, there's been layoffs, you know, coworkers are dropping like flies. We're never seeing each other, you know, and when we do, it's on these tiring, you know, you know, draining emotionally WebExes and Zooms all day, you know, training courses have evolved and shifted and moved, and workshops are getting handled differently. And, you know, and then there's also the, hey, how's my job? Like, am I safe? Am I secure? We all have colleagues that have had work either delay or go away, or they're, you know, they're either on the bench or they're on unemployment, kind of a thing. It's a thing. Like, how in the world am I supposed to focus on, like, getting the you know, maximizing the amount of work not done in my backlogs when we're like, hey, are we all going to be here in a month or two? And I mean, it's, I don't know. I've tried to not pretend like it's not there. At some point in time, I know you have to just move on and make the best of it. But it's hard. It's really, really hard. We've never had to do like this before, ever.
It's really, really hard. And I think it's different than, what was it, 2007, where we might have seen layoff, you know, more kind of mass layoffs and difficult times. But now we have it's closer to home for some whose friends and family are impacted by COVID. There's a lot of other dynamics going on with our, you know, US and other governments. There's like so many different things kind of layered on. And I think for me, at least, it's kind of like, all right, where are you at? And what kind of impact do you want to make, right? So there, I had a very wise leader once say to me after I was reteamed out of this group, and it was a very big loss for me. I wasn't in the Slack channels anymore. I didn't have that community every day. And I was like reorged over here. And I met with the leader that had, you know, that was part of this, orchestrating this change. And I'm like, you know, I just felt really dismissed and I wasn't included anymore in it. And, you know, it was like my team every day. And like, suddenly I'm still at the company, but I'm like over here. And she said to me, and she's like, okay, Heidi, well, you have an opportunity. Okay. I want you to like, this is what she said, it all very matter of fact. And she's like, what impact do you want to make? What are the outcomes you need to have created to make that impact? And who are you going to get together to help you create those outcomes? And I included that in my book as this, like, what's your impact activity? Because it's kind of like, let's say you find yourself over there. You're on the other side of this change. You're in your new team. You're in your new organization. Or maybe you don't have one right now because you're out of your organization. It's kind of like, all right, you got to realign. You've got to survive. Look at where you are now. What impact can you make in this context? And maybe there's a few different ones. And then you can talk with a coach or a manager or director about like choosing one. And then it's like, okay, well, what's the first kind of few outcomes you need to have happen? And you get that together. And then it's kind of like, all right, well, who are you going to partner with to make this happen? And so for me personally, what I did in that case was I leaned the hell into cycle time stability and helping people forecast when work will be done. And it got myself kind of a new beginning in my company. And I got together a group of engineering managers who are enthusiasts of this. We're into Actionable Agile and Dan Vacanti's work that and we talk about that stuff. We give Tim Doherty and I, an architect at Procore, give talks about what we're doing. But the fact was, like, I recalibrated myself and had a new purpose through just that, you know, it's almost like she said it in like 2 minutes. And I was just so inspired by that I was kind of like, I found myself, like, when I'm coaching engineers that I work with or, you know, wherever they are, I find myself kind of repeating this type of approach, which is like, all right, well, you know what? You got to flip this into opportunity. I know it hurts, but there's with any kind of big changes, there's opportunity. And how are you going to step into that? And how are we going to, like, make this thing succeed? Because you got to anchor to purpose. Like, we've got a huge purpose. We can make a huge impact. You know, like Procore in the construction industry, we can help make job sites safer with some of our quality and safety tools. We can help we can help our customers succeed. We can help improve communication in the construction industry. Like, there is a very meaty purpose there. And so it's like, all right, well, let's lean into that, because that's part of the impact we can have in the world. Now, what's your piece going to be in this right now?
So it's a very meaty purpose, but it's also very lofty, right? And connecting your individual or whatever your definition of team purpose to that is helpful. But when you're sliding down that curve, holy crap.
Yeah.
Trying to get out the other side, and particularly with all this stuff that seems to be amplified so much in terms of stress and loss and perseverance in what we face every day, not just in the US, but across the globe. Resilience, right? That capacity to stay moving on no matter what's happening. And so, I mean, that was what you described with that leader that helped you. What a wonderful gift in 2 minutes to help unlock something you didn't even know you possessed.
Yeah, I think it was an epic example of leadership. And to your point though, right? We're humans and we're adjusting to whatever changes at our own rates and based on what's going on with us locally. If we're farther away from the change and it's not so personal, maybe we see it differently than, it's impacting one of our loved ones or our close family. I really love this book. And I cite it in my second edition. It's Transitions by William Bridges, Making Sense of Life Changes. He talks about, like, when going through change, you have endings, you have neutral zone, and new beginnings. So I see it like, all right, we know some things are over. How are we going to appreciate the ending? And you can do activities around that. And it's kind of like, well, then he calls it a neutral zone. I think it's, I like to think about it as really like a transition zone, that time when this person's over it, this person's in the pit of despair, this person just learned about it, and this one doesn't know about it. Like, people are in these different places.
And they're all on the same team. They're all on the same team at the same time being talked to in the same way, and it doesn't land.
Right. And it's invisible. How do I know where you are or where I am unless we talk about it as a team? And, once I was reorged, we were all one level and we reported to a CTO, and then it was turned into a pyramid, right? Peers were reporting to people got, promoted, and we were reporting to each other, and it was like we were flat and then we turned into a pyramid. And it was through a series of one-on-ones at this particular company. And then it was like, once we had the opportunity to talk about our original team system and how it had changed, then I felt like we could get over it, because we had never had the opportunity before then to really kind of process the changes. So I think if we, with consultants too, I think it's helpful if somebody's not in the company helping us process some of these changes. We talk about what happened. What are we saying goodbye to? People, you lose a lot. So maybe you lose information. Maybe you've lost stature. Maybe you lose, people can lose a variety of things in different changes. Talking about those things and then getting into like, all right, this stuff, we got to move forward. What do we want that to be like? And kind of visioning what we want things to be like. And okay, well, what kind of agreements might we make with each other so that we can go in that direction? But you can't do the visioning and going into the future directioning so easily with, I think, full ownership, unless you have a time to go through that neutral, what does he call it? Neutral zone, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
You can't, I think a lot of the times, many leaders of the changes, they've been talking about things for months and months before any person has, when are you first introduced to this concept of change? Well, for some people, it could have been 6 months ago. For some people, it could have been a week ago. And others, they haven't heard about it yet. And so we got to, let's reflect on these things and determine how to shift forward. Can we develop a better capacity for continuous reorging? Because if the company's survival is at stake, we're going to have more and more change. And I think it's appropriate. And I think it's part of the deal. So let's get better at it, even though it can hurt like hell. It can rip your heart out. Other times, if you want the change and you decide within your team and then you split, maybe it doesn't hurt like hell. Maybe it's like what you want. It varies. So.
How does this, you know, especially what you've seen in the past year, Heidi, like what does, when this happens, how are their leaders kind of resonating emotionally with all of this reteaming? Do the leaders kind of appreciate the dynamic nature of this? Are they the ones that are driving it? Are they more kind of in the passenger seat sometimes? Like kind of, you know, not necessarily from a tactical sense, because obviously they're the ones that are being asked to drive this stuff, but kind of from an emotional, psychological sense, like how do they kind of respond to this reteaming effort?
Yeah, and we're talking in general, you know, this isn't not about Procore, just talking about teams in general. I think talking about reteaming, getting better at reteaming, talking about how can we create an environment of trust and safety when we have to make some radical moves is important. So I think having that kind of, you know, leaders reflecting on reteaming, crafting what they want to happen for whatever reason, maybe they must because it's a financial economic thing and it isn't how it used to be, and we need to reshift. These are very difficult decisions to make. And I think we need to, you know, it's not just about the teams. It's about like, how can we prepare our leaders to make decisions that are very difficult with empathy? And how can we coach our leadership groups to be aware of things like, you know, a lot of the times when, If you have a coworker that's departing, sometimes people have survivor's guilt. Sometimes, you have organizational development groups that, you know, the discipline of change management and helping people through change. Maybe a part of HR departments have teams that help manage the changes and bring in tools, coaching, one-on-one support for leaders. Depending on the background of the leaders, they might have different levels of experience. For some of them, they could be a new leader. This is the only particular company they've ever worked at. They've never been through difficult transition, such as having to let people go. For others, maybe they have. And so I think, you know, talking through these things as a team of leaders is important, aligning on the plan. I think it takes careful coordination, and even with the best intentions, it can be very painful. So I think this COVID era has really shown some of the more challenging sides of reteaming, the reteaming that people didn't necessarily want to have happen. You know, on the flip side, there's changes that are more proactive with reteaming, like maybe we intentionally want to try to spread knowledge around our teams by strategically reteaming every 3 months. Maybe we take a person and, you know, we reteam at a cadence to build a more resilient company. So there's many different facets, but right now I think, how can we support people through changes they didn't necessarily choose is the theme of the day, because we've got a lot of stuff coming in at us. How can we, as Andy said, kind of build our resilience? How can we build safety when there's a lot of fear? So let's, you know, maybe we can lean into some of the work. Gita talking about psychological safety, Amy Edmondson's work, the Fearless Organization, Crucial Conversations, the syntax for having difficult conversations, leaning into Esther Derby, Diana Larson on how can we have effective retrospectives, and how can we see retrospectives as going beyond the team? Mm-hmm. Right. With some of these systems, like if there's a group that's determining the changes for an organization, how can we support that group and have some feedback loops with retrospectives? So coaching agile teams, Lisa Atkins' work can be really helpful, I think, to review about how to coach people through change. So I think we have such amazing thought leadership in the agile space that, leaning into, well, what's the current kind of canon that we should like focus on to help people through this industry shift, right? Because we've had this, you know, at this highest level, this industry shift.
talked earlier about the concentric notion of teams at the beginning of the cast, and I think the concentric notion of leadership also applies here. And you talked about it, but it's not just dynamic reteaming at the smallest cellular component of the organization, the singular team. It's the teams of teams. It's the leadership team. It's the executive team. And if 2020 hasn't made that so obvious, there's some people not paying attention. And so supporting that top to bottom, bottom to top, has got to be something that all of us rally behind.
Yeah, I heard Adam Grant in a podcast who wrote the book Originals. I heard him talk about that this year there were things happening under the surface, changes, kind of small changes that were kind of beginning to make their way into, you can make it like whatever industry, whatever, right? We could look all meta at our work and say, what are the things that we're kind of already starting that have then been kicked into high gear because of this, right? Like if there's, you know, whether it's a principle that we were kind of iffy on that needed to be shifted, or a way of working that needed to be changed, whether it's technical practice, a people practice, like, you know, an HR practice, kind of financing work. If financing work needed to be shifted, like if there's one thing that's kicked all of that into high gear, it's this, you know, this strange quarantine that we have to do. So it's worth looking at, it's worth looking at a big picture, like almost monthly, and just going, what's changed, right? Because if we can do that, not just in our teams, but in our clients, our organizations, or whatever, if we can do that, then we won't look up, you know, 2 years from now and be surprised. We will have seen it kind of happen kind of periodically, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah. And I think to what you were saying here, what's changed, you're onto a really important point, is that I think it's more helpful to get specific about what change are you talking about and how can you help the people through this change, as opposed to talking about generic change. It's like, what does that mean? All right, change management. Like, it's more helpful to talk about, okay, we have a different definition of roles right now. How are we going to support that change? This one team just got dispersed. How are we going to support that change? This role was just eliminated and we have a new role. How are we going to support this change? So I think getting really specific, because there's so many different, all right, suddenly we're all working from home and we have different levels of access to internet and other things. How are we going to support this change? I think getting really specific is more useful. And I just wanted to say, so Geeta Klitgaard, hopefully I'm saying her last name, she talks a lot about psychological safety and has workshops about it for any of your listeners to, she's a very empathetic, wonderful person. For any of your listeners who heard me say the name Geeta, you know, so it's kind of like, you know, it's the time of leaning into the humans, I think, more than the story points. We do need to deliver and we do need to be predictable. That stuff is all important. We need to build the right thing to keep our companies afloat. We've got to go support the strategy and make it successful. But you know, the focus on the human and helping people feel like they can be productive is important, and that lower the fear. Not easy.
And it's not easy. And we have to do it with empathy and not just keep piling changes on changes on changes. We have to find the right cadence, the right depth of that J curve, and do the best we can get to get a little bit out of chaos, at least into complexity.
Yep. Yeah, I think like the super challenging part of 2020 is a lot of it's been out of many of our controls, right? It's been just like, you know, and it's just compounded by just all this stuff that many of us never imagined or wanted to have happen or whatever it is, you know, that
we
can't
lifetime.
Really control the rate. Right. So then how do we get through it? It's not always going to be that we can control the rate. Maybe some of the things we can, but this is where optimism comes in, right? Like, okay, well, what is in our control? and how can we respond to the changes that are happening around us, and how can we support each other? I think there's intentional things we can do, like, okay, some changes are given or we can't really control for whatever reason, whatever they are. And again, what kind of changes are you talking about? All right, maybe it's a layoff, okay? Maybe it's out of our control, but all right, how are we gonna respond to this as humans together is something that's in our control.
Yeah, I love that. We have a retro that we floated around on the uprising that ends in, or there's a middle section about, is this in our control or is it not in our control? And what do we wanna do? The action is maybe we wanna move the fence or maybe we just accept it. Chris, you want to take us home?
Whew, man, this is meaty. as per usual, we should have expected nothing less from our amazing guests. So, Heidi, how can people get in touch with you? How can they get your book? What's the best way people can reach out to you?
Yeah, probably the one-stop shop is really HeidiHelfand.com. And check out my website. It was recently redesigned. And very excited. Good Karma Works is the wonderful web design company. And you could reach out to me on LinkedIn as well, Heidi Helfand, heidi.helfand@gmail.com, whatever people would like. And really appreciate the time to chat with
it's
both of you. I know.
Enjoyable.
Yeah, you know, some of the stuff is kind of heavy, right? It's, we got to get through all this stuff together. So,
Yeah.
We like having these conversations as much as possible just because ignoring them is not going to make it go away. So I'd rather just have a chat. So let's not make it 3 years again before the next time, Heidi. So you shouldn't have to write it. You shouldn't have to update your book for us to come on. So let's find a, find a way to make this happen again sooner.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Chris, for co-hosting, and thank you, Heidi. To our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, give us a review, leave some comments on your favorite podcast platform of choice. It really helps spread the word. If this is your first time tuning in, subscribe, hit the next edition automatically. If you want to join the conversation, share your stories about how you're building resilience and making it through day to day, hour to hour, or even minute to minute. Join us over at agileuprising.com. You'll find links to our coalition and Discord server. And finally, if you'd like to get some good swag in the mail, become a patron, and we'll send you a package in a plain brown envelope. Until next time, this is the Agile Uprising Podcast, signing out.
Oh, is this video?
No.
Okay, sorry.
We're not going to release the video.
Okay.
Unless you insist, because my hair is a mess too.
No, we're, just it's always good to know, so.